I'm Kevin Middleton.
And I'm Samantha Berg. And this is The Bridge to Everywhere. Welcome to The Bridge to Everywhere, a holistic exploration of individual health, community, and culture. The topics we'll be discussing on the show will address health for informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. If you have a medical condition, please consult an appropriate care provider.
Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Middleton, and tonight we have Stella Lynn, local herbalist and certified doula. And she's going to talk to us a lot about herbs, and we're going to go into what a doula does and what her role in the community is.
Hi, everyone. I'm Samantha Berg, and I'm an acupuncturist. Kevin and I own Alaska Center for Acupuncture in the Kozlowski Center, and we're really excited to have Stella on the show tonight. Hi, Stella.
Hi.
So Stella owns, she's an herbalist, and she owns Village Birth and Herbal. She's upstairs in the Kozlowski building right around the corner from our office, Alaska Center for Acupuncture. And I want to tell you a little bit about Stella, and then I'm going to have her introduce herself. So Stella has been studying and working with herbal medicine since 1994. She's learned about plant medicine from a variety of practitioners over the years, such as renowned herbalists Susan Weed, Rosemary Gladstar, and Janice Schofield, and from midwives during the three apprenticeships that she's participated in. Her own self-study, extensive research, time spent with plants themselves, and using herbal medicine to care for the health of her family, which is what her interest developed out of in the first place, has been the most valuable aspect of her training. In addition to offering services to the community through her practice, Village Herbals, which used to be called Red Moon Rising, she works to support families in the childbearing year with her doula services, providing care during pregnancy, birth, and the postpartum period. So we're going to start off the talk tonight. We're going to talk to Stella a little bit about herbalism, and then after the break, we're probably going to move into talking about Stella's training. She's currently training to be a midwife and talk about what it's like to be a doula. And so, hi, Stella.
Hi.
So let me have you talk a little bit about what inspired you to become an herbalist in the first place.
Well, one could say that I felt pushed into it a little bit. I was having my own journey through health stuff that I wasn't finding solutions for in the conventional routes, and sort of started to look for alternative means for caring for myself and my family that was just beginning back in those days. And, you know, I just I feel like herbal medicine is really, and I think this was kind of the title we chose for this talk, is really people's medicine. And the accessibility of it and the simplicity of it really appeals to my senses. I think that there's a real wild beauty in the things that are growing right on your doorstep. And to feel empowered to walk outside and connect with those plants that way, you know, it does more than just heal a runny nose or a bruise. It really connects you to your source and to your home in the deepest sense of the word. So that really, you know, kind of is what moves through me about herbal medicine. And I'm just constantly reinforced and receiving affirmation all the time that's really the oldest system of medicine turns out to be, you know, the really most no-brainer in my reality structure. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, it seems like there's just a real vast world when you're talking about herbal medicine. Do you have a way of breaking it down into, you know, certain, components that would be easier to comprehend? So there's,
yeah,
you know, herbs that are right outside of your door. There's medicinal herbs. There's herbs for injury and trauma. How do you break that down?
Yeah, well, like I'm talking about the ones that are right outside your door. I really feel like that's the best place for people to start. And it can become as complex as you want it to be, to the point where you need a PhD to understand, you know, the different aspects of ethnobotany, or it can be as simple as a mother looking outside for something to put on a scraped knee. So the way that I kind of think of it, to break it down and make it a little easier to grasp, is to think maybe you could say in terms of like three categories. The first category would be plants that just are nourishing kind of food grade herbs, things that are as safe to eat as a salad or a plate of broccoli. And there are a lot of herbs probably right where you live that fit that category. And those plants are really speaking to us in the plant language of eat lots of me all the time. I'm really safe and non-toxic. And those plants we can use every day of our lives. And, you know, that brings up the point of really looking at health as a state of vitality, not so much as the absence of disease. And those are the plants in that first category that really help us to thrive in that way.
And I like what you say about those plants. I've heard you call them back porch herbs. And to me, that just really brings home, it's like those are the herbs that are growing right outside my door. So, of course, those are the things I should be eating, right?
Right.
And, of course, sorry, those are the things that we're actually putting weed killer on.
Yeah. We drive using petrol to the store to buy food that's been shipped up using petrol and had chemical spray to eat instead of the really nourishing
food. So those would be things like like the dandelions and the chickweed and the plantain or the pineapple weed, all those things that are that most people just consider weeds are actually really nourishing and full of minerals, right?
Those are really my favorite plants and the plants that introduced me to this entire world of plant medicine. Yeah, and then the second category could be some plants jump from the first category to the second category kind of when you need them to, but those are plants that you might use when you're kind of in an acute state or having something that is, you know, really going on besides just maintaining vitality. Maybe you have an ear infection or maybe, you know, sometimes I'll choose things from this category for people that have really struggled with some chronic stuff and they just need a boost in a different direction. And those herbs are ones that, well, in their plant language, you'll see them really growing. Maybe you'll see them growing in large stands. Maybe where people live, or maybe more in outlying areas, and these are all huge generalizations that I'm making, but it kind of helps your brain to start to wrap around all these concepts. But these are plants that you wouldn't necessarily put on a plate and eat a whole plate full. The taste might repel you from doing that, but they're the ones that you use plenty of for a specific period of time to heal something. And then you go back to your first category. And then
I just want to interrupt there. So you could think of those as like there's a food that you would put on your plate, and then there's like the spices, like the rosemary and the thyme and the cardamom and the cumin. All those things are really strong. They have a lot of essential oils in them, and then maybe antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal. But you wouldn't need a plate of cardamom or a plate of rosemary or plate. You would use it as an accent on the plate, but you might have a little bit of it with your food, but you wouldn't do a huge amount of it all the time.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Or like a great example of a plant like that that we have growing everywhere here is yarrow.
Great.
So like you have a urinary tract infection or you have a really bad cold, you're going to really load up on that yarrow. But then when it's resolved, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I want to get back to yarrow at some point because I want to have you tell a story of yarrow. But keep going. Yeah.
So category number three would be plants that really do require more respect when you're using them, and they come with their cautions for sure. And they're things that you would never consider eating a plate of, like maybe you could use cayenne pepper as an example. Or plants that grow locally but kind of way out. Like you think about the plants way out in the mountains that are growing sparsely. They're really ones that, you know, not only do you want to respect them for the fact of their very potent and potentially toxic nature, but which is also, you know, very good medicine at certain times, but also to respect their existence and not wiping them out.
And what would be an example?
Well, like something like that would be potentially poisonous, and you would use a great deal of respect with it, would be digitalis maybe, or, you know, there's you could find examples kind of like up in Hatcher's Pass in our local area where you would see plants like that that are ones that are going to have a very particular use, not be an everyday plant or not even maybe once in your life.
And to bring it back to the original analogy, we talked about back porch herbs, and now the back porch herbs are screaming, eat me, here I am, there's lots of me. And then you have these things that are growing, you know, really, they're far out of reach. Like we have to kind of work to find them. And so those are, and again, huge generalization, of course, but generally those kinds of things are like maybe you use them once or twice for a very specific use, but not for a long time, and you wouldn't consider them food level.
Right. And there are, of course, gray areas where we cross over.
Well, we see so much fireweed everywhere, you know, and that's medicinal, right? How would you use? I'm just curious. Where does that one fit in?
There's a really great thing about fireweed, and that's its versatility. So, and this brings up a point about an approach that you can take with herbal medicine in general, which is rather than thinking about, well, you know, you have to learn all these different herbs, you can really learn a handful of herbs and learn maybe 40 uses for one plant instead of 40 plants, you know. So with fireweed, for example, it's as simple as you can put the leaves and flowers in your salad and eat it. Or if, say, you had a situation of diarrhea, you would use like a hot infusion of it to be more astringent, and that means drying and solving problems of runniness. And then maybe you could use that same plant in the situation of constipation by making a cold infusion, which pulls more mucilage out of the plant and into the water, which is a cooling, soothing kind of bulking property.
And can you say what hot infusion and cold infusion and maybe the difference
sure.
in preparation?
Yeah, infusion is a really good word to know. And some herbalists don't make a differentiate between tea and infusion, but I do, just to cut down on confusion. So an infusion is 1 cup, roughly, or 1 ounce of dried herb per 1 quart of water brewed for at least 4 hours or overnight. So to make an infusion, you put a cup of herb in the jar, you pour the boiling water over it, you cap it, it stands for 4 hours or overnight, and then you strain it out. And that's the resulting liquid. It's called an infusion. And that is a really great way to work with all those herbs in the first category we talked about. And
so that's because you're getting a lot of minerals in the water. So you're getting a huge amount of mineral content in the water, but it would be different than drinking a cup of tea where you're just kind of getting flavored water.
Exactly.
Correct? Yeah.
And some herbs you do want to prepare as a tea, which is, you know, maybe a couple tablespoons of fresh or dried herb brewed for a few minutes in hot water, maybe 20 minutes, you know, is how you make your typical cup of tea. And some herbs that are much more aromatic are going to want to be brewed that way, like chamomile or lavender. If you were to do a long extraction process on those herbs, it would become too bitter, and you might even extract things you don't want. So this is where the art and science of herbal medicine gets really interesting, is that you know, I always talk about there's 5 questions you really want to ask when you approach a plant. Which part? When is it harvested? How is it prepared? What is the dosage? And are there any contraindications? So in the case of something like fireweed, or I like to use the example of dandelion.
I was just going to ask you about dandelion.
Yeah.
It's a great example, one of my favorite ones.
It is one of my favorite herbs, too, and everybody knows it. Kids work with it, right? They blow wishes and So with that one, for example, in those asking those 5 questions, if you were to go harvest a root of dandelion in the fall, that's going to look really different than if you were to harvest the root of dandelion in the spring. For example, the inulin that the root contains, which is like the starchy substance in the plant that's going to get it through the winter, is going to be the richest in the fall, and that's going to be more blood sugar regulating. Whereas if you were to go and dig dandelion in the spring, the plant will have used most of its inulin and be higher in a constituent called teracicin, which is where it gets its name, be a more diuretic remedy at that point.
Yeah, so one of the things that I like about Stella is, although we were just talking a little bit about biochemistry there, she also looks at what we would call the energetics of the herbs, like how is the herb sort of a match for a person. So one of the things that I like about how you talk about dandelion is how hard it is to kill dandelion.
Yeah.
I mean, you can run it over with a truck, you can dump weed killer on it, you know, you can have your dogs pee all over the lawn and the dandelion is what comes up, you know, you try to pull it out and more dandelion pops up. So there's this aspect of dandelion that's really resilient. Versus, you know, think about how easy it is for a dandelion to grow versus how hard it is for us to grow a tomato in Alaska. So that you know, and for those of us who want to be hearty, eat more dandelion.
That's right. You are what you eat.
Uh-huh.
Right, and I think this really points to a holistic perspective that you know, can be foreign in the way that our modern world operates. You know, who would think about a dandelion as you know, resilient, and therefore I should have some of that. And so it's a really great concept to begin to work with.
And another thing I remember Stella talking about with dandelions is the flower itself. It's like, you know, it's just sunshine, and it's something that we don't get a lot of up here except for a very short period of time, if we're lucky. So about the dandelion flower itself, how that literally is like opening your heart. In Chinese medicine, we talk about how the singing voice comes from the heart. And what I've, after listening to Stella's workshops in the past, when I've heard her speak, I've had people who are singers sing something and then eat a dandelion flower and sing again. And anybody who's a professional singer or even a, an amateur singer actually notices the difference in the sound of their voice when they eat a dandelion flower and they sing. So it's something really clear. It's very cool.
It's just really important to pick your harvesting area carefully.
Yeah, watch out for the dandelions with the dog poop on.
Yeah, or you don't want to be harvesting next to the road. You know, it's you want to really go into an open field where there's just clean.
Yeah, and what you're talking about brings up a great point, which is that you'll learn more from the plants directly than you could ever learn from a book. And it can't be overstated how much spending time with the plants in their natural habitat can deepen the understanding of what that is medicinally.
Yeah, there's actually a story about an herbalist. You can look it up on the internet. The guy's name is Joe Pye. It was called Joe Pye Weed. And apparently he used this one herb for everything. And the story is that actually when he died, the plant stopped working. But he had developed this relationship with the plant that whoever came to him, that's what he gave them. And that's how it got the name Joe Pye Weed. So, yeah, the more you work with the herbs, the more you deepen your understanding of what they can do and you learn.
There's a great story on a movie on Ayurvedic medicine, Indian Ayurvedic medicine, and I saw it on Netflix not too long ago. And it profiled this man, this old master herbalist who lived in the forest, and the whole community would come to him. They just lines and lines of people every morning. And very, very early he'd get up, and he'd just go out, and he would just harvest. He'd go out with a machete and just cut roots here, cut vines there, cut herbs here, leaves from this plant, leaves from that plant. And then he'd have this big bushels. And then he would just stand, he would just sit in this stool and have people come up to him. He'd speak to them and he'd just grab a handful of this, grab a handful of that, and send them on their way. And he was creating incredible results. I mean, he was the foundation of healthcare in that community.
That's great to use the intuitive, to be intuitive with it that way. It really speaks, you know, volumes of his depth, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Understanding.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, somebody who wants to come in for a consult with you. You know, what would that experience be like to do an herbal consultation? What are the kinds of things people are coming in for? And, of course, there are things that people think to come in for, but how would you like to see herbalism best used in the community? So, like, what's your goal for how, you know, you want people to think about herbs when they come to see you?
Okay, yeah. So when I do a consultation, it's something I schedule by appointment, and I can do visits in my office or by phone or at home for people that find it challenging to get around. A consultation usually lasts about an hour and a half. I can, you know, make it work for whatever the person's time schedule is, but it really is an opportunity to look at the big picture together. And the way it works is for me to ask a bunch of nosy questions to get the best picture that I can of this person's health history and what's bringing them in, to really talk about that. And, you know, it's a journey we go on together, really, and I'm constantly learning right along with the people that I'm working with. And what I find is that a lot of times it's the storytelling and sort of the intention setting about what the shift is that they're looking for, that and even the fact that they're walking in through the door in the first place, it's really speaking to readiness for shifting tendencies. And so we sort of talk about what's going on, and I like to have people bring a list of everything that they're taking or bring the thing itself, the bottles of supplements or things like that, so that we can really look at them together. And I'm just seeing myself as in an educational role at that point, and I really emphasize that we're working together and the person is taking responsibility for their health, and so I'm just giving them options and helping them to make an informed choice, and then if we settle on an herbal regimen that feels good, then I'm able to give them guidance about what the dosage of that herb is or anything to watch out for with that, although mostly we really are always sticking with those very much in the first category that we started out talking about and then some in the second. And I'm available, you know, for feedback or questions if they go home and they can't quite remember how I said to prepare something or something like that, or if anything comes up. But follow-ups are really something that I encourage, and I leave up to the person to decide when they're ready for that. If it's just a matter of kind of getting a refill, then we usually have a brief check-in at that point. But it's something that I think is very valuable. And, you know, I do make a lot of formulas that kind of go out into the world, and different chiropractors and midwives and different practitioners are sort of dispensing to their clients. So in that case, I've just sort of put a generic dose on the label, and I don't really know whose hands it's going to end up in. And it can work that way, but a consultation is a real opportunity for it to go deeper for that person and be more individualized. And so some of the things I would say, like some of the things that I'm seeing people for, it really ranges because I work with everybody from newborns to elderly folks and everything in between, and I never am quite sure who's going to come in. But it seems like a lot of conversations revolve around, I would say, around energy, fatigue, allergies, eczema, maybe like hormonal troubles people are having with or you know, things that are sort of normal to be experiencing, and I can help normalize those things, like during menopause perhaps, or it could be more looking for remedial help with things like morning sickness or a lot of colds and flus, I would say, you know, coughs, asthma, sort of your household typical stuff most of the time. Sometimes stepping into another realm a little bit with more chronic or more unusual acute situations. But, you know, by and large, it's all the sort of household
level. So you're seeing the kinds of things that, you know, you might not necessarily need to go to a primary care MD, you know, if you've got a garden variety cold or you have some of these things don't necessarily, you know, require medication, you know, and so we're trained in our culture, like, oh, we have something going on, we need to get medication, but maybe we can use something that's a little less strong that will be more nourishing and building and help us cope with whatever it is that we're dealing with instead of maybe suppressing a symptom.
Yeah, that's true, and sometimes, I would say it ranges, but sometimes I'll see, you know, what I like to work with is prevention.
Right.
So this can be a very invisible kind of an approach, and in this case, no one is the hero. No one is getting rescued. We're just preventing things from going in a downward spiral, and I love that. I love the mystery of that, and I love that the person has taken responsibility and been empowered to have some tools to stay well versus falling apart and then fixing it, sort of. But one of the things that I would like to add to that, too, is that a lot of times people choose to work with me herbally as an adjunct therapy to something else that they're doing, whether it's chemotherapy or maybe they really did get a really bad lung infection and so they went and got antibiotics. But I'm going to help them, like, maybe tone and strengthen the particular organ system that was having the issue, if it was the lungs or whatever, and be able to kind of not only help them get well again, but really in a way kind of healing and wholing and helping the person to choose some remedies that are, and, you know, supportive herbs that are going to help them create a better pattern.
Right, and there is a place for some of that, you know, we would call heroic medicine. Of course, if somebody's in a car accident, you know, they go to an emergency room and they get put back together and they're maybe on some meds for a time. But there's a certain point where it's like you're helping the body get back to a state of health. It's not necessarily just sort of putting the parts back together and making sure they work, but it's something larger than that so that they can do what they're here to do.
Right.
Yeah.
I really like what you're saying about the way you frame the consultation. It's really getting the person connected to something deeper in themselves. They obviously just get into the appointment with you. They've already crossed the bridge. They're already, you know, really opening up to a more empowered relationship to their health. But then when you can give them a preparation that they make, an herb that's really for them, and then they get into the habit of doing the infusions, making those preparations, just that kind of interactive personal engagement with one's own health is so powerful. And when we see patients that are also working with you, it is always impressive to us because they've already crossed that. They're already sort of actively taking care of themselves. And it's huge. A lot of us don't think there's even time to make breakfast. So that extra step of I'm making this herbal infusion and it's a deep part of my well-being and for my family's well-being, it's a huge leap. And it's a simple one, but it just takes creating a little bit of space in one's world to take care of themselves. And it's powerful.
If you can boil water while you brush your teeth, you can have a fusion every day.
Right. And something else that you say that I think, we can't say this enough is that if somebody lives a life, and they make it to 100 and they've been healthy their whole life, they've been contributing to their community, they took care of their family, they raised amazing kids, they've lived this whole life and they've been able to, be really a contributing, vital person in their world, but they never really had some sort of illness that they had to overcome. Sometimes we think of that as, well, did anything really happen? So you're, as an herbalist, you're kind of operating in the background, making sure that people stay healthy so they can do what they're here to do.
Good genetics.
It was that cigarette and that bottle of Jack Daniels that I drank every day. That's why I stayed healthy. But really, I mean, that's kind of, a lot of times we think about health in terms of we've got to do something to make something happen. But this could be as simple as sitting down and drinking a cup of tea or drinking a quart of infusion every day, or having some sort of, tincture in your cup of tea. It's not really that complicated. And so sometimes it gets overlooked because it doesn't seem to have that, wow, we're really doing something experience.
I like to say that prevention like that is sort of, it's like woman's work. No one notices what you're doing until you stop all the laundry and the dishes.
Right. But how about the fact that these herbs exist? I mean, and that there's such an incredible synergistic relationship with other living creatures on the earth. I mean, doesn't that just blow your mind?
Yes.
In Chinese herbs, in Chinese herbology, this herb will have this thermodynamic effect in the body. It'll help drain dampness, or this will help dry, or this will help warm, or this will cool. And they have very specific therapeutic effects in the living systems. And it's just that, just to take that in is incredible.
Yes. Yeah, it's almost like nature planned it that
way. Maybe
about
we're
that,
not
yeah.
separate from nature.
Right, and when you go outside and collect that, you are really weaving yourself into the web of all that is, and that is the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there is hypericin in that particular leaf or something feels to me secondary to the fact that maybe you walked out with bare feet and felt the earth beneath your feet and felt the dew on the leaf and heard the birds as you were doing it and had an intention of what you were doing there, picking that plant and walking back through your door to prepare it for your family. I think that's where the real magic of herbal medicine is in that moment. And the rest is the stuff you can see under the microscope.
Right. And one of the first things I've ever heard you say about herbalism that really struck me was you said eat something wild every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard you say that, and then I sort of made an effort every day to go out and go, oh, what are these little bluebell things? Obviously I didn't eat digitalis. I looked at a book first. Right. I did look at a book. I picked up one of Janice Schofield's book, and I walked around in my yard, and I thought, oh, okay, I can try some of this. And I just started I had a different relationship with the plants. In the past, it just, when I grew up on Long Island, where everything is, a lawn and manicured and very, looking a particular way. And in some ways, Alaska compared to that looks sort of messy. When you don't have a lawn, there's these wild, messy plants growing everywhere. But then you start to get to know them, and now I see this level of beauty in the wild plants that I really never saw before. Where I was growing up, that would have been a messy lawn that somebody needs to get in there with a weed whacker and a lawnmower. And now it's like, wow, look at this abundance. I wonder what I can do with that.
It brings to mind a funny story of how more than once I've had neighbor kids approach me, can we mow your lawn? And I'll say, no way, I eat all that stuff. And I picture them going home and saying, Mom, that crazy
lady.
But the truth is there's hardly any grass in there. It be what it wants to be.
Yeah.
It's really just a salad waiting to be
picked. Yeah. Speaking of that, I want to have you talk about one of your favorite herbs, your namesake herb. The chickweed.
Chickweed is the herb that got me into all this, and it happened.
Oh, you know what? Hold on. We're gonna take a quick station break right now, and then we'll get back to Stella talking
about
chickweed.
We're speaking to Stella Lynn, local herbalist here in Palmer, and we'll be back after this brief message.
FreePalmer.org. This is your chance to invent community radio in Sutton, Butte, Chickaloon, Palmer, and the surrounding areas. Big Cabbage Radio.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Bridge to Everywhere with Kevin Middleton and Samantha Berg.
I'm Samantha Berg. I'm here with Kevin Middleton and herbalist Stella Lynn. And we were just about to talk about Stella's favorite herb, chickweed. So go ahead, Stella, give us a little bit of insight into chickweed and the kinds of things that you use it for.
Well, first, I just have to say it's a little bit like choosing a favorite child. But it is one of my all-time favorites. It's the herb that got me into herbalism. And it happened when I sat down in a patch of it and was told by a friend who was also using plant medicine a lot and learning about it. She said, you can eat that weed. And I took some bites of it, and I felt a tremendous shift in my whole being, really. It just was like, oh, the heavens opened, and nothing was ever the same again. And so I really got interested in that plant, and I spent a long time just with that plant, working deeply with it. And, you know, chickweed is a very versatile plant. It's a perfect example of something that has no toxic upper limit, that really wants to be eaten every day that it's growing. It's it shows you that by the fact that the more that you cut the tops, which are the parts that you taste the juiciest and are the yummiest, the more you harvest it, the more it produces those yummy parts. And so it's like there's a relationship going on. If you leave it to be neglected, it gets very long and stringy, and that's not so tasty. And most people are shocked to learn that this obnoxious weed that they're constantly trying to eradicate from their garden can actually be useful. And, you know, you can start by just taking a nibble of it. You can start putting it in your salads. Pretty soon you might decide you want no other lettuce or anything in your salad because it's so good. And, you know, some of the primary uses of chickweed are, or sort of the keynote feature of chickweed, I would say, is it's about cell permeability. Cellular permeability. So I work with it a lot where there's people who maybe need to heal gut issues. They need better absorption from the things they're eating. And that's the beautiful thing about it, is it not only helps with that, but it itself is so nutritive. So it's just loaded with minerals and vitamins, and it's, you know, additionally, it's rich in saponic acid, which makes it a first choice for weight loss.
So that would be the weight loss herb of choice. Yeah. I like to tell people when I'm trying to get people to get interested in herbalism, and a lot of people come in and they want to know, what can you do for weight loss? And I say, well, you know, chickweed is actually the weight loss herb of choice. And people go, really? I have all this chickweed in my garden. I say, great. Talk to Stella. You know, let her teach you how to make a tincture out of it, or get some tincture from Stella. So
right. Yeah. And it's funny how, you know, often the things that are growing in your yard are going to be the herbs that we end up choosing.
Right.
So it really works out great that way. But, yeah, the herbs that are good for weight loss are rich in saponic acid. And what that is a soapy kind of substance that slips in to each cell, and it boots out the water and the fat and replaces it with minerals. So what you're building is cellular integrity. And I won't go too deep into the whole hot-button issue of cleansing, but I will say it is a hot topic for me. I really encourage people, rather than to see themselves as toxic and needing to be cleansed, to think about cellular regeneration that's happening all the time in their bodies every day. Old cells are dying and new ones are regenerating. And so when we are partaking in really nutritive herbs, nourishing infusions, having chickweed in our salads, what we're building into those new cells is more cellular, is more integrity. And so, for example, you know, every 30 days at the cellular level, you have a new set of kidneys. And every 40 days, you have a new liver. And every 24 hours, your intestinal lining is replaced. And on through all the body. And I think the last thing to sort of have that ultimate changeover is the brain, and my understanding is that that takes 7 years. But to think in terms of moving in the direction of better health starts really with the next thing you're going to eat for lunch. And if you can choose some wild foods, those are the ones that your body are the most deeply encoded for, like the key fits in the lock, the very best with a wild plant, as far as what your cell receptor sites are asking for. And so something like chickweed that is wild, that's growing outside your door, that's so nutritive, that's so safe, I mean, why not, right?
And when you're trying to make a change, too, I mean, chickweed is also, just that's because of what you described, it's, you know, if you need help on, you know, well, I need to do something different, you know, chickweed might be your herb partner for that. That might be the thing that you would look to.
Yeah, I think of it as the herb for shifting tendencies and sort of getting unstuck. So a lot of times when you feel like you've been on that path where you've been trying everything and nothing's working, I might even just add chickweed to whatever formula we're choosing in order to kind of assist with that shift and make it a little smoother transition and get unstuck a little more readily.
Great. Now, how about herbs in the wintertime versus herbs in the summertime? So do they preserve well as dried? Do you have the same nutrients and nourishment? What's just between raw that you're picking in the summer and the spring and when you're drying them out for the winter? What's lost in that process?
It definitely differs plant by plant. I mean, in the case of chickweed, it's at its very, very best fresh. So even if you were to be able to prepare a tincture from the fresh plant, that's like getting the fresh plant all year. Now, to make a generalization, usually an infusion or a tea, something that's water-based, is going to be more on the nutritive side, and something that's extracted using alcohol, like a tincture, is going to be more on the medicinal side. So in the case of chickweed, you can dry it and use it throughout the winter, but I feel that the main purpose that would be serving would be at the level of minerals. Most of the other stuff we've talked about that herb, will be lost in the drying process. Other herbs, that's not the case. And it's really on a plant-by-plant basis, but it's great. You know, what I encourage people to do that are interested in learning more about herbs is to choose sort of maybe even just one herb that this summer you could get to know that grows where you live, and just try doing everything with that plant. Try eating it. I want to say this is after you've identified it as a safe and edible herb.
Go find a book and look it up. Yeah.
While we're on that topic, what would be the top resource? What do you suggest?
You know, I do like Janice Schofield's book, Discovering Wild Plants, for where we live as a really great resource for learning a lot about local plants here.
And there, she's got a smaller, like, pocket-sized book that you can carry with you when you hike, too, that's got a shorter version of that larger book.
Good point. Yeah, so anything... she's got a whole book about nettles, which are one of my favorite plants. It's also a pocket-sized book, and it just goes to show you a whole book can be written about nettles.
Yep.
That's how great they are. But, yeah, that or in the spirit of going very deep with one plant, you might want to check out Susan Weed's Wise Woman Herbal. It's called Healing Wise. It's a green book, and I suggest that local people go to Fireside Books and look for that. They often have it, or will order that or any other book you want for you. And that is a good one for – she talks, I think, in depth about, I think, seven plants. So it gives you an idea of how to look at one plant deeply. And like I was saying, try doing everything with one plant. Try drying it. Try making a tea from it fresh, making a tea from it dry, an infusion in the moonlight and the sunlight and the hot water and cold water. You know, put it up in oil, put it up in vinegar, put it up in alcohol. Try all the different solvents are going to pull different things from the plant. And that any of those books, another great author, Rosemary Gladstar, anything she writes, those are kind of my top three favorite. Very accessible, sort of householder level, anybody can understand it, herbal books. And they'll teach you about how to make some of those different preparations. But along those lines, you know, I saw that a great herbalist named Paul Bergner was giving a class called How to Be a Master Herbalist in 30 Years or More. So just be patient with yourself and know that it's constantly going to be a journey of unfolding, and you know, you'll learn the most from the plants, more than you'll learn from any other practitioner or book. So there's just nothing that can take the place of spending the actual time with those plants in their habitat.
I And you mentioned making vinegars, which we haven't really talked about so far at this point. So at your house, I know I tried a horsetail vinegar that you had. And I think, I don't know if you did chickweed vinegar. I actually made some, and it was really good. So that's another way to use it. Get it on, put it, make it as a salad dressing. Really, you can use it. And it's a great way to get some of the nutritive aspects of the plant.
So take your fresh plant. Well, any of those will work, or lamb's quarters, or plantain, or nettles. Chop them up. Put them in a jar to fill the jar, not like jam-packed, but to the top, and then fill the same jar with vinegar. And in this case, it's best not to use a raw vinegar. Usually I'm all about living enzymatic stuff, but you'll end up with a funky science experiment. So some apple cider vinegar or balsamic vinegar or red wine vinegar, anything you like that's pasteurized, fill that same jar that you've stuffed with the plant, fill it with to the very tippy top with the vinegar. Put a plastic or a non-metal lid on it because it will rust otherwise, and leave it for 6 weeks. Every time you look at it, give it a little shake if you can think of it. And then after that, you can strain that out, and yeah, you can use it in your recipes in place of any other vinegar. And what are you getting? Tons of nutrition, tons of minerals. So you're just sort of upping the ante, sneaking it into your diet.
And much better than having wishbone salad dressing with lots of artificial flavors and colorings. You know, you mix that, your chickweed vinegar or your lamb's quarter vinegar or your dandelion vinegar with a little bit of, you know, extra virgin olive oil, and maybe throw some herbs and spices in there, and that's the best.
I mean, why would somebody ever buy salad dressing at the store? You have to wonder, because, I mean, you can just do so much on your own.
Yeah, you just need to learn that it's as simple as mixing oil, vinegar, and spices.
Right.
And it's really, then you're more control of what oils you're getting. And that's another topic.
Yeah. There's so many different ways we could go here. But I do want to mention that if you want to try some of Stella's, Stella actually has some of her teas, that she, some herbal blends that she's made, and they're available at Turkey Red. So if you go to Turkey Red Restaurant, you can order some of her blends in a tea form, and that would be where you're getting a small amount in you know, a cup or 2 cups of water. So you're kind of getting, you know, flavored water, but you're sort of like a very light entree into herbs. And what, one of my favorite herbal combinations that she uses, it's called the powerhouse tea. That's also what Stella refers to as her Fab Four. So I just would like you to introduce that combination.
Oh,
little,
that was what we said.
Just talk, tell everybody, because it's a place where a lot of people start, and all of those herbs, just like we were talking about before, multiple uses for one herb. Mm-hmm. So if you're just doing the Fab Four every day, you're getting something really wonderful and nourishing.
And I think, Sam, that you named the Fabulous Four. I didn't need to put them together.
Or the Quad Shot.
Now I do blend them and sell it as a pre-mixed thing. But yes, it's nettle leaf, oat straw, comfrey leaf, and red clover blossoms. And there in that blend are two herbs you can pick that are growing wild, and two herbs that you can grow here where we live. The oat straw and the comfrey you would need to introduce, and would be very easy to do that. And the nettle and the red clover are things that you can pick wild. Infusion is always made using a dried plant. So, you know, you're taking those dried herbs, and like I said, you're putting a cup of those, whatever combination thereof, or all four of those. You're putting a cup per quart of water. You're pouring boiling water over them in a jar, capping it and leaving it for 4 hours or overnight, then straining it out. And I want to say that temperature greatly affects the taste. The least popular taste is room temperature. I personally like my water and things like that at room temperature, but in the case of infusion, it will be a lot tastier if you heat it after you've strained it, heat it back up on the stovetop, or chill it. And do keep whatever you're not going to drink right away in the fridge. But that's something that you can just chug away on every day as your daily brew. And I think I owe so much to that blend in my practice. I'm certain that most of the good results people are getting are from consistent use of infusions like that, just from their body finally going, I'm fed in the deepest way. And it's true, like you can eat bags and bags of cookies and chips and still feel hungry. A cup of infusion and you are satiated. It is food in a drinkable form.
And can you say a cup of dried infusion or herbs would be the equivalent of how much?
Right, that amount of fresh plant material. You know, I mix up these herbs and I sell them in a 1 pound bag, which is about like kind of a stuffed gallon Ziploc full amount. And really, when that plant material is fresh, it would easily cover the floor of most, I don't know, people's living rooms or dining rooms or something. It's a lot of fresh plant material, and the only way to really get nourished is with a bulk amount of nutrients. And this is why I use the Fabulous Four in place of a synthetic vitamin or mineral supplement personally, or you could do both if you wanted to make sure you were covering all your bases. But it's a highly absorbable form of all these nutrients that your body doesn't have to do any more work to break down. It's bioactive. It's pre-digested by the time it's brewed. So you're getting platefuls worth of vegetables, worth of minerals in every cup.
And you can really feel that when you're drinking the infusions.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Your body just says, yes.
You feel like a plant that hasn't been watered, you know, and all of a sudden it's like you sprout back up.
True.
It really feels that way.
I don't know how I would do all that I do in my life without infusion. It gives me a lot of energy and really is the fuel, you know, that my body seems to look for.
So. Same here. I mean, I really credit the infusions to everything that we're able to do, having a quart of that, sometimes two quarts a day. I mean, I really just feel like, and there's a way in which you actually get hydrated because you're getting minerals, and so you can hold on to water. It's, you know, a lot of the advice we get is, oh, you should drink your 8 glasses of water a day, but I have so many people that come in and they're drinking so much water and they're like, I'm still hydrated. I'm still dehydrated because they're not getting enough minerals, you know. They're not getting a fat either, but that's another conversation. But they're not getting any minerals, so they're not really holding on to the water.
You know, on this subject, you know, we have, although we're Radio Free Palmer, we have listeners around the U.S., and we have even some friends probably in Europe that are listening. Where would people go to learn about this? You know, what are the questions to ask to get good quality material?
So when you go to buy dried plants, dried herbs, you want them to look like fresh herbs minus the water. You want them to be the same color as they were when they were growing. You can really feel the vibrancy of good quality herbs versus something that's been fumigated or irradiated. And, you know, the very best is always going to be that which you can harvest yourself, and not everybody can do that. So different health food stores have bulk herbs that they offer, and, you know, there are different online sources. There are different, and I would suggest that people search out their local herbalist. And maybe this is a bit of putting in a plug, but I just think, you know, we need to mutually support each other, and our that really helps in your community, keeping it local. So, you know, really think first of as much nutritive use of herbs as you can make, then you'll need less in the way of medicine, if all goes according to plan. And then when you have something more going on that needs attention, think about what plant medicine, you know, can do in that situation, either primarily or secondarily to whatever it is that you choose. And some people are in a situation where they need to go for a more, you know, maybe even sometimes, I think in the picture of holistic healing, everything has a place. That could mean surgery, chemotherapy, or antibiotics. I mean, these things exist for a reason, but we kind of want to exhaust all the other possibilities before we go for something that could also cause adverse effects. So that's the beautiful thing about herbs, is the side effects are good.
Right.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. It's, you know, always thinking about it in terms of the right tool for the right job. Mm-hmm. So, you know, why use a machine gun if you need a feather? Mm-hmm. It's really what it comes down to. You know, think about what you have going on and ask questions, you know, and that's why I take advantage of the people that we have in the community. And Stella's a great resource. You know, if you went to Stella and said, hey, I've got this going on, what do you think about herbs in this situation? She's going to tell you, yes, this is a perfect use of herbalism, or, you know, maybe I think this could be a good use, or, you know what, really this might be something that you need to elevate and do some sort of stronger medicine.
Like a perfect example of that would be thyroid stuff, because really if your thyroid is so out of whack that you're going to be needing glandular support of some kind, you know, I get this question a lot. Is there an herb I can take instead of Synthroid or Armored Thyroid or something? And, you know, the fact is that there is no plant that is going to offer that kind of therapeutic effect, but that doesn't mean that herbs can't be a part of your healing journey. I like to do a sort of overall endocrine system support blend of herbs and particularly focus on the adrenal glands and really get the infusions going for this person and make some dietary shifts, which I didn't say, but is another part of what a consultation can be, to whatever degree or extent a person feels ready to look at diet and make a few shifts. Little changes can make huge shifts. So,
and thyroid stuff is a really good example because a lot of, again, it's, are we thinking about health in terms of a symptom? You know, the number showing up on the test that the person has elevated TSH, you know, or the, you know, their numbers on their free T3 or free T4, whatever's coming back, we're showing something's out of whack. But then are you treating the blood test? Mm-hmm. To get the numbers to work out perfectly, or are you taking a step back and saying, okay, let's look at this person's life. You know, are they, you know, in a high stress situation? Do they have lots of kids? Are they getting enough sleep? You know, are they eating tons of sugar and tons of caffeine? You know, so of course their thyroid's going to be out of whack. And like you said, likely their adrenals. And if it's a woman, you know, there's probably something showing up with the female hormones and cycle wise. So even though you couldn't necessarily give an herb to make that blood tests look better, you can certainly support all the other organ systems and support the person so that they can get healthy, and then maybe they won't need so much of the thyroid medicine. Maybe they'll be taking the glandular for a while, and maybe they'll be able to get off of it. Maybe they won't, but they won't necessarily have to, you know, take a huge amount of medicine, which could conceivably go from bringing them into balance to swinging them, you know, off the other way as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, and we probably should transition to the doula. Right. Part of the program. But before we do this, I would love to hear what you have to say for men's health and herbs, and if there's a few things to say about that in terms of prostate health. And
oh, yeah, sure. You know, prostate health, that's a great point. And a lot of times I'll even be touting an herb as so great for women, and really it could work just as well for men. And so an example, I have a blend that I call Dr. Dandelion's blend, and that is the prostate herb of choice. I think it also has saw palmetto berries in it, and cleavers, and nettles. This would be an example of a blend that people could take, whether they're just trying to prevent the issue, and that would look like one particular way of dosing that remedy, or if they're in an acute state, then we might even choose that same remedy but use a different dose. But men's health, I really like to do preventative work that way on stuff like prostate. And, you know, another real big issue is heart disease. And
absolutely.
Guess what a really great herb for the heart is?
Dandelion.
And I don't want to, you know, say that there's not a lot of others, but since we keep harping on dandelion, it just wanted to show up again right there. But yeah, you know, something like hawthorn or linden is a really great heart herb. Motherwort, this is a classic herb that we think of as a woman's herb, but it's actually a really great herb for men. So tonic herbs, things that are going to strengthen and support those organs, those systems of the body. This can work really in a beautiful way, whether we're needing it preventatively and more invisibly, and hopefully we don't end up with a problem, or if somebody has an issue going on, then that would be, you know, it's funny how you can draw from the same pool and just use the same herbs differently.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I like the Fab Four, again, that mm-hmm. combo, because all those herbs have so many different uses. So you're not just taking, oh, well, I'm taking nettles for this reason, mm-hmm. but you're getting all the other 30 or 40 uses when you're taking them.
Yeah.
So why don't we do this, since we only have, you know, maybe 7 minutes to go, and I want to give, you know, the talk about being, I want to talk about doulas, and I want to go deep into that. So why don't we make this a little bit of an introduction mm-hmm. about being a doula and your training to be a midwife, and then we'll kind of set that up for the next time we have you come back. So it just means you're going to have to come back on Bridge to Everywhere, which I'm sure isn't a problem for you. And we're happy to have you back. So plenty, yeah, lots to talk about. Yeah. So let's just talk about, you know, what a lot of people haven't even heard that word doula before. So Stella is a doula, and she's in the process of training to be a midwife, which are two separate things. So maybe just give us a little bit of an overview of what's a doula, what's the difference between being a doula and a midwife, and we'll see how far we get.
Okay.
And then if there's time, maybe you could say a little bit about being a doula.
Right. So a doula, I want it to be a household name. It should be a word we all know the meaning of. And it is an ancient concept. It has returned recently to the hospital rooms and birth rooms. But basically, the role of a doula is that of an advocate, emotional support, physical support during labor and birth, and equally importantly, prenatally and postpartum for the childbearing family. So, you know, a doula doesn't hold any responsibility for the clinical aspects of care. The woman who comes to me to hire me to be her doula has a primary care provider, whether that's a midwife, a direct entry midwife, a certified nurse midwife, or a doctor, physician, OBGYN. And as her doula, I meet with her a couple of times at least, depending how much time we have to work before she has her baby, to really talk about what her vision is for her birth, talk about previous experiences, talk about this pregnancy and relevant, you know, stuff going on in this pregnancy. And we make a birth plan, which, you know, I wanna put the emphasis on that, you know, we kind of talk about the birth plan in order to shape the vision. And what's required in birth is a lot of flexibility and kind of rolling with what it becomes. But it's a very helpful tool for a woman to have a doula and to have a birth plan so that she can feel like she can really go to labor land and know that her wishes are known and that there's somebody sort of holding space and standing sentry over her experience. And this allows the father, this is how it's also a doula, this allows the father or the partner of the woman to really be able to be present and bond and have their own emotional experience and not feel like they are also being looked at as holding the responsibility for all the stuff the doula is able to do. And sometimes it looks like you need to go drink some water so you can keep doing this, father. And sometimes it looks like I'm showing him, here, put pressure right here. And I really do try to work with the family in order, in a way that that helps the parents to use this as a bonding experience. So, you know, sometimes it's me really connecting, looking deep into the woman's eyes and coaching her. But if I can help the father figure out how to do that, that's all the better for the future health of that family. Now, a midwife is somebody who is a primary care provider, and they're, you know, they're doing the cervical checks. They're doing the blood pressure. They're, and quite often, all that emotional stuff as well. But in a hospital setting, you know, you're never sure. You're not going to have a lot of continuity in your care necessarily because you don't know who the nurses are going to be and you don't even know if your doctor will be on call when you have your baby. So a doula really provides continuity if somebody that you've worked with all along.
And I think about it. You've got experience. You've been to a lot of births. You know what's normal. And often couples are going, so it's their first birth, you know, and they don't necessarily know what to expect and what's normal. And when the woman's going through what she's going through and the husband's trying to support, it can feel like, well, what do I need to do here? I want to do something, but not knowing what to do. And it can be a little bit frustrating to be in that situation where one person's obviously in pain, obviously scared, obviously not knowing what's normal, and the other person wants to help and wants to be part of it, but doesn't really know what to do. So you provide a really important role as a doula.
So what's it like for you to see the beginning of life as just a part of the work you do?
It's awe-inspiring, and every single birth is different, and it's endless variety, and I don't know, it just pretty much brings me to my knees in wonder. It's great. I love it. I love watching that first breath be taken, and I love watching couples become families, and it's a really, really, it's a huge blessing. It's a really great job.
That's awesome.
Well, we're speaking with Stella Lynn, herbalist extraordinaire. Her office is upstairs in the Kozlowski Center in downtown Palmer, and I really encourage you to pay her a visit. Just stepping into her office is a healing experience in and of itself.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stella, for joining us. Thanks, everyone, for joining us on Bridge to Everywhere this evening. And just want to let you know in 2 weeks we'll be interviewing Rolfer Leah Rostocki, and that will be 2 weeks from this Monday. Great to have you here with us. Have a good night.
Thanks so much for joining us. For joining us on the Bridge to Everywhere, broadcasting on KVRF 89.5 Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. Like us on Facebook at Bridge to Everywhere to access more information, links and resources from our guests and show topics.